Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There is no better group of plants for flower power than forms of the shrubby potentilla.
Hello and welcome to This Week in the Garden. I'm Peter Seabrook, here to help with some of your gardening quandaries. It's been cold here, but believe me, it's been colder in Chicago. This week, we go stateside and speak to Chris Bates of Ball Publishing. They provide the horticultural community with all the information they need on the latest innovations and crops. I'll be asking Chris about the introduction of Impatiens Beacon to the UK this spring. My thanks to Westland Horticulture, sponsors of this podcast, and of course to my producer, Charlie Jones. February Fieldike, the old saying goes, but while rain is getting into the soil on my veg plot, we're not up to field capacity yet. That's the point when, if I'm digging, the bottom of the trench actually fills with water. I quite like to see that because in my part of the country it's quite dry through the summer, and if you have really got good reserves of water well down and you mulch, then there's a very good chance that you can hang on to that moisture when it's needed in very hot weather. The cold, drying winds have taken away some of the moisture that we got from melted snow. Soil's pretty good, works pretty well. And when I stop and think about it, most of the weather through January, and again now in February, is quite remarkable. It's really good out in the garden over the last weekend, and the buds are beginning to swell. I see that on the apricots, they're almost to the point of showing a bit of colour. And, of course, we've got daffodils now, showing the very early ones showing colour. Things are really on the move. That's what we like to see. Days getting a bit longer, evenings a bit lighter, and the sun with a bit of power in it. Last January saw gardening off to a flying start, with garden centre sales up by 7% compared to last year. And those sales set a new record for January. I'm not sure that snow is going to help February much, although Tim Jeffries tells me that the mail orders for Mr. Fothergill seeds are coming in well. I've just received the latest catalogue from Dibley's, the specialist indoor plant nursery up in North Wales, and they'll be introducing Streptocarpus lemon sorbet. It's a cream with carmine throat, and it looks very attractive. We'll be seeing that at Chelsea Flower Show. But I like to go to the Dibley catalogue to check out on the hot water plant, Echimenes. I don't know why more people don't grow those. It has a little rhizome, looks a bit like a birch tree seed cone. A little tiny little flaky pieces, and you just pop those into some universal potting compost, several of them in a 5-inch pot, and they flower right the way through the summer and into autumn. And they're a good purchase because where you buy just 2 or 3 rhizomes, when you break them out of the pot in the autumn, you've got a lot more for your money. Actually, talking about hot water plant rhizomes, be a good time to check all those frost tender tubers and corms for any sign of disease. Hard frost caught me a bit ill prepared, although the potatoes in the garage were in a very thick cardboard box and they look to be all right so far. I've got several quite big zonal geraniums which sometimes survive outside in a protected corner close to the house. They look a bit woebegone now, and I need to fetch off every dead leaf and trim back the young shoots that have obviously been killed. If you are trying to overwinter stuff, do make sure that the dead leaves don't hang about, because when the weather goes a bit damp and mild, botrytis can really settle in and the disease damage what healthy growth you have got left. It's not just the plants that are outside. If you've got cuttings rooted on the windowsill indoors, it's the same kind of story. Keep all the dead leaves cleaned off. Water regularly, but the plants don't want to sit wet at this time of the year. The compost just needs to be damp. So when you draw the curtains, just lift the pot, see how heavy it is. If it's heavy, it means the compost is still really quite damp. But as that dries, then of course it'll get lighter in weight and you'll need more moisture. Cuttings rooted last autumn on windowsills are beginning to grow. Now that the days are lengthening a bit and with the warmth from the central heating. And so it'll be time to just ease those gently out their pots, take some of the old compost off, repot them into fresh, and away they'll go again. I'm doing that at present with both the zonal and regal pelargoniums and fuchsias. The fuchsias, you can take the tips out in a few weeks' time, root those. So as well as the original plant rooted last autumn, you can increase the numbers by rooting the tips.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Our guest interview today is rather special, and we're going quite a long way, right across the Atlantic to Chicago. My guest is Chris Bates, who's the editor of a magazine called Grower Talks, which quite honestly is the Bible to many of us grower people, if we want to know what's going on. Chris and I met in Germany a week or two ago, and our paths do cross occasionally. Now, Chris, I hear some remarkable news about the weather with you in Chicago.
Well, it's a balmy 41 or 43 today here in Chicago, out in the western suburbs. 4 days ago, it was 27 below zero Fahrenheit, which is, even by Chicago standards, that's extremely nippy. I went out in there for a few minutes just to top off the bird feeders, and I realized this is the kind of weather in which, if you're not careful, they will find you next spring as a frozen lump. So I dashed back into the house very quickly, but pretty extreme.
I mean, we've been complaining here with just 3 or 4 degrees of frost, you know, the ground quite hard. But, I mean, that's unbelievable. How do you survive those sort of temperatures?
Well, you stay indoors, is really, because that's when you realize that is it's truly dangerous cold. And then you throw on the wind chill, which you wonder what that really means. But when you're out in 27 below and the wind is blowing, and then the air is like razor blades. So for me, I come back inside and I have a very nice sunroom. My wife is a horticulturist and a houseplant collector. And I'm in it right now, as a matter of fact, and I'm surrounded by about 100 tropical plants. It's about 70 degrees. I have a little fountain in one corner. I have music playing. So that's how you get through a Chicago winter, surrounded by plants. We're Floridians originally, and so we're used to being surrounded by plants, you know, 365 days a year. And in Chicago, you have to pretty much stop gardening outdoors by mid-October when it freezes. So a couple of years ago, I built this this addition on my house, which is a beautiful sunroom, almost a conservatory, but not quite. And it's chock full of my wife's succulent and tropical collection. So that's what I'm surrounded by right now. It's very nice.
Because in the summer, it will be the reverse, won't it? I mean, I've been there occasionally for the centenary of Ball, for example, and it was very humid and very high temperature. So you have great extremes, don't you?
It'll go to 95 or even touch 100, but it doesn't do it for long like it would in the southern U.S. You know, it'll get up there for a few days, but then it comes back down, and it comes back down in the evening too. I grew up in Florida where, gosh, during the extreme of, you know, July or August, even at night, it's you know, 9 or 10 at night, it's still 85 degrees and 90% humidity. You don't get any relief here. You at least get the relief in the evening. So it's not a bad place to live. Although I will say we have our sights set back on Florida, so we can go back to gardening year round.
Yeah. Well, now, can we talk a little bit about grower talks? I mean, a lot of my listeners...
You mentioned Ball, and I'm sure folks want to know what you mean by Ball, the Ball Centennial. Grower Talks magazine is a greenhouse trade publication, so it doesn't go to consumers or to gardeners, although you can certainly access it online at growertalks.com, but it goes to professional plant growers, and it's been doing that since 1937, when it was created by George J. Ball, who was the founder of the Ball Seed Company. And you mentioned Ball. Ball is a big wholesale supplier of seed and plants and, to some extent, supplies. They also do breeding of plants. We may talk about that a little bit here this morning. And they have operations around the world. It's truly a global company. And I run the publishing division, running Grower Talks magazine. We have a garden center magazine called Green Profit. And now, because of course, the modern age of technology and the internet, we do a lot of different e-newsletters. I do videos. I do webinars. I don't do podcasts yet. I've been thinking about that one. That's still, I'm leaving that one to you. To you, Peter.
Well, here we don't have any vision, so they don't have to see us. But who knows what the future holds?
Good time today, for me, anyway.
Now, as part of the job as editor, you travel, obviously, the States very widely and abroad. How do you see the industry at present? I mean, it's changing, isn't it? Well, it's certainly changed, as far as I'm concerned, over the last 10 years.
It really is. I think that, you know, consumers, and my interest is not only how do you produce plants profitably, but how do you sell them? How do you get consumers to become gardeners, to even know that the world that we live in exists. And it's amazing how many people kind of don't pay any attention to it. They take it for granted, you know, the world of flowers and plants. But especially with technology and the internet and Amazon and all these different factors coming in, how do we get people to want to go outside and get their hands dirty? And so that's what I spent a lot of my time thinking about, writing about. Certainly, in fact, one of the questions I'll have for you later is how has the UK gardener changed over the decades? But we spent a lot of time talking about how do we keep flowers and plants in front of the consumer. We also talk about labor costs. That's probably the number one thing I hear greenhouse growers talking about. Labor is getting more and more expensive. It's also more scarce. It's hard to find folks who want to work out in a hot greenhouse or a nursery field. It's not a glamorous job. I have the glamorous job. You and I do, traveling around looking at these things. But producing them, which we've also both done, I think, is very tough. So that's what we spend a lot of time doing.
I have quite happy memories of working in really hot greenhouses and out in the winter, too, lifting rose bushes when it's cold. I love
it. You'd go back to it in a second, I'm sure, wouldn't you?
Oh, I love the job. I love the job, yeah. I always used to go home lunchtime, and if I was working in a cucumber house with the temperature up in the 90s, you know, you need to have a really good lunch, you know, then you can put up with the heat.
It's true. And my wife and I had a greenhouse in Florida, commercial greenhouse, so that's how I got into it. I have an education in journalism, so that's how I combined the two. And it truly is a great, great field. And we work very hard to encourage younger people to come into it. You know, not everybody can be or even wants to be a computer programmer, right? Or a financial wizard on, you know, Wall Street or what have you. It's a tremendous, there's tremendous opportunities to get out in, you know, and surround yourself with plants. And there's a lot of opportunities here in the States. When we talk about what are the changes I've seen, the local food movement is very big. So you see lots and lots of greenhouses popping up in places where you didn't before, where they're growing fresh tomatoes or fresh greens for, you know, hyper local consumption. And that's sort of an inroad to younger people to find out about, you know, the greenhouse industry, and maybe to lead over to flowers and plants, the area I spend more time talking about. Another very interesting one is cannabis, marijuana production, and it's becoming legal either medicinally or even recreational, kind of state by state over here, and in Canada as well, where it's now countrywide, it's legal recreationally, and there's been a lot of new greenhouses being built, also greenhouses being converted over into cannabis, and those facilities need growers. And so some people are discovering our world of growing plants by growing cannabis. Now, will they eventually be tired of being, you know, those? I've been in those facilities that are surrounded by barbed wire and cameras, and you're scanned in and out. And it's, you know, most people who get into the plant business, they like freedom. They like the open and the fresh air and like that. So I'm hoping that some of those folks, after a few years of growing cannabis, will say, you know, this is fine, but gosh, I think I'll grow some poinsettias or Easter lilies or something instead. That's our hope.
Well, I think one of the most profitable crops here in Britain is probably cannabis. But, of course, it's all illegal and shouldn't be the case. But things are changing quite fast. On a more open note, Chris, can I take you on to the Busy Lizzie, the new Impatiens Beacon? It's just been announced here in Britain that we will have some sedum plants. But you actually saw trials of Beacon last summer, I believe.
I did. Beacon is actually bred by one of my sister companies called Pan American Seed, which is kind of based here in Chicago, but they have a facility in the Netherlands. And it's there that a breeder quite a few years ago found one variety of Impatiens Wallerianae. Actually, I'm not even sure it's a Wallerianae. They won't share all the details. That proved to have resistance to Impatiens Downy Mildew, which is this devastating disease, which has not only wiped out the Busy Lizzie in UK, but in South Africa, Australia, much of the US, especially in the hotter, more humid climates like Florida and the East Coast, dropping that plant from the number one bedding plant, the number one garden plant, dropping it by 40 to 60% or more to sales, especially where you are. So now this new variety called Beacon has come out. I wrote about it a year ago and actually saw the trial plants and the finished plants in the Netherlands. So I was really the first person to write about it. At the time, it wasn't even named. I saw it 3 weeks ago in Florida, out in the ground in trials, looking very, very nice, when any other Impatiens would have been wiped out by this disease. And it is coming into the UK market this spring. So gardeners will finally have a chance to maybe bring back those beautiful Impatiens to the shade. There's a second variety from another company, Syngenta Flowers, called Imara. And I think we saw that one at the IPM show in Germany, where we both were 2 weeks ago. So that's a second one that's going to be on the market. Now, the real test will be, how does it perform in the gardener's landscape? Regardless of what the breeders say and how much testing has been done, and trust me, lots of testing has been done on these varieties to ensure that they are, I think the term is, highly resistant to Impatiens Downy Mildew. But it'll the the proof is in the pudding, as they say. How will it do out in the landscape?
But you've
so that's exciting news.
Yeah, on your video, was that in Holland or in California?
The one I just recently posted was in Florida.
Oh, right.
Was in Florida, yep.
Yeah. And because the plants looked really full of flower, nicely compact, looked like a very good introduction to me.
Yes, there's not lots of colors. Some of the older series, like Accent, that you might have seen, or some of the others, had as many as 30 different shades of orange and salmon and pink and white and lavender. And these are maybe six colors for Beacon, I think, and Mara might have eight or nine, including a bicolor. They're the older series. There were compact ones. There were vigorous ones for baskets. These are more the vigorous types. So if you're looking for something very small and tidy to go in a small spot, these may not do it. But I'm sure once these succeed, there'll be lots and lots of breeding coming behind it. And gosh, in 5 or 10 years, I'm hoping, fingers crossed, we'll have Impatiens and Busy Lizzies back to their number one position. And I know everybody who gardens in the shade is looking for those to come back, because there just haven't been any really good substitutions for a shady garden.
You know, it's really good news to see that. And quite fast that the breeders have come up with resistance. It takes time, doesn't it? And I think it was 2012 when Downy Mildew wiped out Busy Lizzies here in the UK. So we're talking 6 or 7 years, and breeders have come up with the answer.
Yeah, and the interesting story, at least about Beacon, and I'm not as familiar with how Imara from Syngenta came about, but in Beacon's case, Ball actually contracted with a Dutch genetics company to do I forget what it's called now when you do the genetic mapping.
Is that the genome?
Right. Yep. Yeah, the genome mapping of Impatiens. And now I don't want anyone to think that this is a genetic modified flower in any way, nothing like that. What it means, though, is that the breeders were able to create a cross, and then within really days of planting the seeds from that cross, send the little tiny plantlets, just, you know, a half inch or an inch tall, off to the lab, and the lab could look at the DNA of that and tell right away if the resistant gene was in those seedlings or not, or which ones had it. And then they could grow on the ones that had it and dispose of the ones that didn't. And it greatly sped up the breeding process. They didn't have to wait and grow it out and then test it to see if it had the resistance. And so instead of having to grow 10,000 seedlings to find just a few, they did the genetic test, weeded out the 9,000 plus that didn't have it, and then focused their attention on the few that did. And that sped up the process. So it's a combination of a traditional breeding with modern genetic testing to bring us this new variety.
We live in an amazing world, don't we?
It really is. And Ball, my parent company here in West Chicago, just west of the big city, is in the process of building a big new facility, a technology center that's going to make even more of those kinds of technological advances available to garden flowers, which is amazing, because a lot of energy is put into corn and soybeans and the big high money crops, but it hasn't been affordable to use those technologies to make better, more disease resistant flowers or tastier, longer lasting vegetables, those kinds of things. And now maybe we'll be able to do that. So that's exciting. And I get to write about it. That's the fun part.
Chris, it's great talking to you today. Hope we make a link up again in the future. Wish you well, and hope that mild weather, he says in inverted commas, continues with you.
Peter, can I just say, too, that I've known you since the late 70s when you were a host of the Victory Garden, and I was just a young college student. And for me to get to be on the phone with you, or not only talk to you in person and sort of be colleagues in this industry, is you just don't know how exciting that is for me. So thank you for all you've done.
My tailpiece this week was prompted by one of the broadsheets that had a feature recently about green food and sustainability of food. They told us that over 30% of bread was thrown away. I couldn't believe that. I don't know when I last threw away a bit of bread. I mean, when it gets a bit dry, you toast it, don't you? And if it's too dry for toasting, then just leave it in the air and make breadcrumbs and freeze it. I mean, there's no need to waste any food. And when I went through this sustainability and green food, there was no mention of growing your own. I mean, if you grow your own and you've got 6 or 8 Brussels sprouts in a row, for example, in a little bit of ground out by the back door, you just pick what you want. There is no waste, is there? And all of the plant remains just goes on the compost heap, recycled, and goes back into the soil. I just don't understand the modern approach today. Grow your own. If you have a surplus, well, particularly with things like soft fruits, well, and top fruits come to that if they're cooked, you just put them in a deep freeze. I really don't understand. There appears to be a whole generation that just likes to throw things away. Not my world. My thanks to Westland Horticulture, sponsors of this podcast. And thanks to you for listening. Enjoy your garden. We'll be back next Thursday. Discover more at sungardening.co.uk.